Chapter 26. Sofia, Bulgaria. Their benefactor's instructions were simple. Drive 10 miles north to the town of Kutina, in the foothills of the Stara Polina Mountains. Find the Kutina Cultural History Museum and ask to see the Deniv exhibit. They pulled into Kutina shortly after 1 in the afternoon and stopped at a cafe for lunch. Using cobbled-together phrases, Sam and Remy were able to get directions to the museum. "By the way," Sam said as he opened the Fiat's driver's door, "did you get that man's name? For the life of me, I can't remember." With her own door half open, Remy paused, her brows furrowed. "That's funny. Neither can I. Something that began with a C, I think." Sam nodded. "Yes, but was that his first name? Or his last name? Or both?" Having seen more than their fair share of Eastern Orthodox churches, Sam and Remy were relieved to find the museum was located in an old butter-yellow farmhouse overlooking the Iskar River. On either side of the structure was lush green horse pasture. They parked in the museum's gravel turnaround, got out, and climbed the porch steps. In the front door's mullioned window was a universal "Be back at" clock sign, but in Cyrillic. The hands were pointed at 2:30. 20 minutes, Sam said. They sat down on the porch swing and rocked back and forth, chatting and killing time. A light rain began to fall, pattering on the roof above. Remy asked, "Why don't we have one of these? It's relaxing." "We do," Sam replied. "I bought it for you for Arbor Day 4 years ago." Sam liked to surprise his wife with gifts on obscure holidays. "I haven't had the time to put it together yet. I'll move it to the top of my to-do list." Remy hugged his arm. "Oh, that's right. Arbor Day. Are you sure it wasn't Groundhog Day?" "No, we were in Ankara on Groundhog Day."
"Are you sure? I could have sworn Ankara was in March."
At 2:28, an old green Bulgaropene coasted into the turnaround and pulled to a stop on the lawn. A lanky woman in granny glasses and a beret climbed out, saw them on the porch, and waved. "Strave," she called. "Strave," Sam and Remy replied in unison. "Hi there" and "Do you speak English?" were two phrases they tried to commit to memory whenever they visited a new country. Sam now used the second phrase as the woman started up the porch steps. She replied, "Yes, I speak English. My sister, who lives in America, Dearborn, Michigan, America. She teaches me over the internets. I am Sovka." Sam and Remy introduced themselves. Sovka asked, "You have come to see the museums?"
"Yes," said Remy.
"Good, then. Follow in, please." Sovka unlocked the front door and stepped inside. Sam and Remy followed. The interior smelled of old wood and cabbage, and the walls were painted in a similar tone as the exterior, faded butter yellow. After hanging up her coat in the foyer closet, the woman led them into a small office in the converted front room.
"What brings you to these museums?" the woman asked.
Sam and Remy had discussed their approach on the way to Kutina and had decided on directness. "We're interested in Father Arnošt Deniv. Someone at the Bulgarian National Library in Sofia suggested you might have some artifacts related to him." Sovka's eyes widened.
"The Methodius? They know about our museums at the Methodius in Sofia?"
Remy nodded.
"Indeed they do."
"Oh, I will be putting this into our soon news flyer paper. What a proud moment for us. To answer question, no, you are mistaken. We do not have some of Father Deniv's personal matters. We have all of his personal matters here. May I ask, why are you interested with him?"
Sam and Remy explained their book project, and Sovka nodded solemnly.
"A dark time for the church. Good that you are writing about it. Come."
They followed Sovka out of the office, down the hall, then up a set of switchback steps to the second floor. Here the walls had been torn down, turning what looked like 1,000 square feet of bedrooms into an open space. Sovka led them to the southeast corner of the house, where a cluster of glass display cases and hanging tapestries had been arranged to form an alcove. Ceiling potlights shone down on the cases. Remy saw it first, followed a moment later by Sam.
"Do you see?"
"I do," he replied.
Sovka asked over his shoulder, "Pardons me?"
"Nothing," Remy replied. Even from 10 feet away, the curved edge of gold seemed to leap out at them from the case near the wall. Hearts pounding, Sam and Remy stepped into the alcove. There, on the top shelf, resting on a folded jet-black cassock trimmed in burnt orange, was the Thurang disc.
Sovka spread her arms with a flourish and said, "Welcome to the Deniv collections. Everything in his possessions at the time of death is here."
Sam and Remy tore their eyes from the disc and looked around. In all, there were perhaps 20 items, most of it clothing, grooming tools, riding instruments, and a few scraps of correspondence mounted in shadow boxes.
"What's this item here?" Remy said, as casually as possible.
Sovka looked at the Thurang disc.
"We are not to be certain. We believe it is a keepsake of sorts, perhaps from within his missionary quest in Savage Lands."
"It's fascinating," Sam said, leaning closer.
"We'll just have a look around, if you don't mind."
"Of course. I am over here, if help is needed."
Sovka wandered off, but never strayed out of eyesight.
"This complicates matters," Remy whispered to Sam.
Relieving Bejim Mala of his Thurang disc had been an easy decision. Here, however, Arnosh Deniv's disc was a part of recognized history. Breaking into the museum after hours would be easy enough, they knew, but neither Sam nor Remy felt good about that option.
"Let's confer with our experts," Remy suggested.
They told Sovka they would be back shortly, then stepped out onto the porch. They dialed Selma, asked her to conference in Jack Karna, then waited through 2 minutes of squelches and clicks as she made the appropriate connections. Once Karna was on the line, Sam explained their situation. Remy asked,
"Jack, what exactly do you need from the discs to make them compatible with the mural map? Is it the disc itself or the markings on it?"
"Both, I suspect. Is there any chance she would lend it to you?"
"Doubtful," Sam replied. "This is her pride and joy, and I'm worried that if we ask, she'll get suspicious. Right now, she's helpful and cooperative. We don't want that to change."
Selma asked, "Jack, how similar in size and shape are the discs?"
"From my research, I would say nearly identical. You'll know for sure when you compare the one Sam and Remy just sent you with the one you retrieved from the chest."
Remy said, "Selma, what are you thinking?"
"Too early to say, Mrs. Fargo, but if you'll all hold for a bit."
The line clicked and went silent. True to her word, Selma was back in 3 minutes.
"I can build one," she said without preamble.
"Well, not me, but I have a friend of a friend who can replicate one with tool and die CAD-CAM precision. If we supply him with enough of the right kind of pictures, he can model the missing disc."
Sam said, "I assume you have a specifications list."
"Sending it to you right now."
After securing Sovka's agreement to let them photograph the Deniv collection in return for a small donation to the museum's new roof fund, Sam and Remy drove back to Sofia, and following both Selma's directions and her shopping list, they collected what they needed. 2 professional-quality triangle-scale rulers, a Lazy Susan turntable, a black inch-high display stand on which the disc could rest, and lights and a tripod for Remy's camera. They were back in Kutina by 4 and shooting 30 minutes after that. Careful to pay the right amount of attention to every artifact in the collection, lest Sovka become too interested, they photographed each in turn, leaving the Thurang disc for last. Having become bored with the process, Sovka had disappeared into her downstairs office.
"This would be much easier if we were unscrupulous," Sam observed. "Think of it as good karma. Besides, who knows what the penalty for historical artifact theft is in Bulgaria?"
Both valid points. With the light box erected and white linen backdrop in place, Sam set up the lights according to Selma's instructions. Once done, Remy placed the display stand on the turntable, then the disc flat on the stand. Finally, the scaled rulers were put in place, forming an L around the disc. After taking a series of test shots and making some adjustments to the camera, Remy began shooting. 5 pictures for each 8-degree turn of the turntable, for a total of 45 turns, or 225 pictures in all. They repeated the process for the disc's opposite side, then shot another series with it standing upright on its stand. Then last, a series of close-ups of the disc's twin faces, concentrating on the symbols. 800 pictures, Remy said, straightening up from her tripod. How big is the file? Remy checked her camera's LCD screen. Wow! 8 gigabytes. Far too big for standard email. I think I know how we can get around that, Sam replied. Let's pack up and get going. After a quick call to Selma, who in turn called Rube, who in turn called his friends at the Sophia Academic Archivist Services Limited, Sam and Remy found the office open when they arrived back in Sophia at 6:30. As with his first visit, Sam was asked only to identify himself and offer a code phrase, this one different than the first, before he was led to an adjoining office and a computer terminal. The office's high-speed internet line made short work of the picture files, uploading them to Selma's storage site in less than 3 minutes. Sam waited for the confirmation message, then returned to the Fiat and Remy. Where to now? She asked. Sam hesitated, frowned. They'd been moving so fast since arriving in Kathmandu, they'd had no chance to consider the question. Sam said, I vote we go home and regroup. Seconded.